Welcome back. Questions we don't have answers. Before we get into proper introductions, I'd like to put a disclaimer here. The reason this delicate subject matter is important to discuss, even between two cishet men, is that how you pronounce that?
Yes.
Cool. Is because if we're all going to be champions for trans rights, we need to get our story straight, probably from transgender people, and then we might pass on what we've learned because the demographics for this kind of education may not listen to transgender activists who are transgender. These people who must be so creative or successful to have their voices heard, where you and I, and you, dear listener, if you are not trans, may have better access to people who may commit violence against our trans neighbors, may have already, but who can be saved. You may even know these people intimately, friends, family. The odds are good that they have a bit of transphobia in them because, frankly, we all do. So before we get started, I just thought that was important to note because, you know, like a lot of these podcasts, this is really none of our business. But in a sense, it is all of our business. So even though the number one authority on a subject like this would be trans activists who are trans, I think that everybody can do their part. And so exploring what that part is, I think, is going to be the object for tonight. Regardless, my name is Harrison. Over to my left, Donovan Grant.
Hello, hello, hello.
And the question is, how do we better engage with trans issues? So, to begin, Donovan.
Oh, what a large audience. I'm up at the podium. Yes, we've done episodes before that have dip the toe into trans issues. I think it was mainly it's been a while since I've listened to it, but I believe, I might be wrong, the Pride and Sexuality episode, we probably mentioned it. You know what, forget what I said, because I don't know for sure. I know we mentioned it in the Pride and, in the Morality and Attraction episode. And, you know, as you said before, we are cishet men, so our education at a minimum is, you know, like next to nil. But we know, as if you listen to this podcast, hopefully you get the sense that we would like to be as open and ingratiating and welcoming to as many people as we can, as many people as exists. And so the topic for tonight is going to talk a lot about transphobia, transphobic violence, and really kind of just horrific statistics that we kind of have to reconcile with that can help us reconcile transphobia in ourselves and start to erase it in ourselves and others. So this is an episode where we're going to kind of, you know, Marvel Comics Rhino style, just kind of ram through each and every talking point as we can. You know, hopefully not without consideration, although, you know, it's us. But we're going to do our best to really try to invite the expressions of other people, like trans activists and trans writers, and really try to get information out there so we can kind of just you know, better humanity in the way that this podcast does. But so this is an episode that might, you know, it might go one way or the other, but it's one of the many that we're going to come back to later on because information is never ending. And with that, I'll throw it over to you in asking straight up, as a cishet man, what is your familiarity with the trans community? And what is your familiarity with trans issues before we actually get into trans issues?
Well, the community itself, I don't really know. I mean, being on the outside of most communities, as most people would be, I've never really looked in, I guess, but I think I've only ever known one. That's a weird way to go about it. Familiarity. I don't know. I mean, I think probably it was around like college that I started to kind of wise up about it. I was pretty much with a majority of America during my high school days, so like, yeah, late teens or whatever. And I think it's important to kind of think about that question for all of us to kind of, if you ever had come around on something, to kind of like really identify what was the moment or and what was the kind of circumstance surrounding it. And for me, it wasn't contact with somebody for real. It was actually, I think it was just reading an author. It was From Alien to the Matrix, which I talk about a lot, from time to time on the first podcast I did, which was written by Roz Caveney, as I discovered, that's how that was pronounced. And I found out that she was transgender, and I thought, for a second, I paused. I was like, does this mean anything? And I said, no. And so that was kind of it. And then I saw, the other big moment was when I saw, it was like some ABC or like Dateline about Jenna Telekova, who's a Canadian beauty queen.
And
that was just it. And I think that's kind of like where some of the problems might arise too for straight guys, especially the complication of the gaze as a kind of normalizing outlet or threshold or something, or medium, I suppose. So that maybe we can get into that later. That's kind of related to the Playboy article too. I think the great solution, in my experience, is to kind of just know of people and care about people who happen to be trans. And I think, like, for all the shit that we might give Twitter or social media for being places where you go to be miserable, it is also a place where you can at least kind of not get to know people, but just know that people are real. And I've seen people who maybe weren't even transphobic, but just kind of who were just like me in high school, come around on trans issues and be like really advocate for them, just because, like, maybe people in their community, maybe it's like a video game or anime community, are trans. And so, like, I wouldn't want to be exclusionary. So I'm going to change parts of myself to accommodate. And that also is the crux of, you know, the privileged and their problems with this. This being the new, or a new, well, not really, or a civil rights issue that's going on right now. You know, it's all the old shit again of, I don't want to have to change anything about myself because I love myself. So, to you, the same. What are your general experiences? How did you turn around on it, or what have you?
What did you turn around? I was always no. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, so the worst. I don't want to say the worst, but you know, the high school I went to was everything phobic. It was racist, it was homophobic, it was transphobic, and it was one of those things where, like, it wasn't something that, like, it was a natural, oh yeah, well, that's weird and that's easy to make fun of and that's bizarre and I wouldn't want to, you know, have sex with this. But when, you know, like with the LGBT, you know, like gay people, you know, coming into my kind of penetrating that sphere on a one-on-one basis and like kind of having like a flip switched, I think with myself, it was – I think the first time I was really kind of made aware of the humanity of the trans community was – do you remember – this is like about 10 years ago. Thomas Beatty, the trans man who gave birth – and that made like national news. And that was a big conversation because I think that was the first time publicly that like a trans person had given birth to a child. And I remember – that being in the news, I remember that. I think it was on Larry King and stuff. And I remember, like, kind of thinking to myself, "Wow, this is." I didn't make a moral judgment. I was like, "Wow, this sure is something with science and everything." And I remember a coworker I was working at Kroger at the time. A coworker was like, "Oh, that poor child. That child has to grow up with this weirdo father, or whatever." And kind of just feeling like that was the wrong stance to take. I was like, "That's not right." And I think it kind of just evolved from there. You know, we had the Wachowskis, come out as trans over the last decade or so. And while I'm not as much of a Wachowski follower as I think you are, it was one thing where I was like, wow, that's something that's more awareness of that, even though I didn't like sit down and kind of necessarily read about it. It was kind of coming into my stratosphere. And, up to this year, I would have said I've never met a trans person, but I had my high school 10-year reunion. I guess 2 months ago, and I went there, and a friend of mine from high school was a trans man, and it was one of those things where, like, I always imagined that I would feel uncomfortable To be honest, and when I would come across a trans person, not in terms of like, you know, fear or whatever, or revulsion, just genuinely just, you know, sort of like imagining, I don't know, that the transition or what they go through, it was a very kind of like legitimately, I'm sounding horrible right now, but to be honest, it was kind of like a troubling thing to kind of wrap my head around for a person personally, kind of to go through that process. But I met my friend Leonard, and upon realizing that he was trans, I was like, that makes total sense. Cause Leonard was kind of an introvert in high school. And, you know, he kind of teased a lot. And it was one of those things where I didn't actually think about it until a couple of days later about how I never really, to kind of pat myself in the back, never really thought too much about it. Was, that makes sense. Okay. And I remember at the time, 2 months ago, that other people were having a lot. It was a very stratified reaction to that, where some people were the more liberal people, the people who became more liberal at post high school were like, "That's cool, that's was really great." And the majority of the others, I went out for dinner after the reunion with some people, and they were going on about like how they were insulted because Leonard had insisted that they call him Leonard, and that they're like, "I don't care if she, you know, she wants to be called this, but why are they going to come after me or whatever?" And kind of just making the conversation about the offense they were taking and like how they like, "I don't care," but they were still like just kind of pissed off at like they felt provoked. And I said, you know, look, and I told them like, look, you know, that's what they want to be. You know, that's one of those things where, you know, like it doesn't impact you whatsoever. And it was one of those like, kind of John Stewart moments where it's like, oh, you're right, cishet straight person, you're absolutely right. And it was one of those things because I would slip up and kind of like dead name him, not to his face, but like in kind of like talking about him. But it was just one of those things where it was like when you're facing with the humanity of the person, I feel as though there shouldn't be anything else, especially if you know the person for a while. Of course, you know, that's not how the case is always going to be. So you should engage with every person with the requisite humanity. But I think that was probably the strongest instance of me interfacing with that. And my reaction being of, okay, well, this is how it is now. It's not, that's all there is to it, and not really trying to make it more about that. And of course, you know, that's not the end of my education. I need to learn more, but that's sort of like where it was up to this point, which I guess is convenient for this podcast.
Yeah, actually, I actually kind of had a similar experience in terms of like the high school reunion type of situation. And I think the idea of that makes complete sense was also definitely a factor here. Because I had a, like, it was the strangest friendship. Let's call her Jotaro. Jotaro, she was definitely introverted, but like even more so, like the introvert of the introvert clique, which was like me and my like three buddies. And she was like the weird one who only really managed to be friends with me kind of, because like I was, kind of like the person who was just like friends with everybody because I didn't care enough to hate any of them. So
not yet anyway.
Yeah. So like I was the only one who would ever like not diss on that person because she was weird. And like in middle school she would always be like quoting like internet memes at people and like talk about anime and it like alienating people. But she was just always there. Like every time you turned around she was just there in our group, and it really pissed off who I guess I'd consider my best friend, who was my college roommate eventually. And so they had a strange relationship too. It was kind of like weirdly antagonistic, but it was kind of like the two losers on Loser Island who couldn't, all they had was each other, so they couldn't like, you know, it was pretty fascinating. It was a good anthropological study over the years, but I remember in high school there was one instance where, like she was a musician, a guitarist, and she was growing her nails out, and obviously that's strange for, you know, what looked like a guy, and she said, "I'm doing this because it helps me play the guitar better instead of using a pick. This is actually what guitarists do. They just play with their hand." And, you know, me and my college roommate, we, like, not knowing anything about music, still knew that that was bullshit. But, you know, we didn't, like, follow it up. We never assumed, because, you know, this was years before. I mean, this would have been around, like, 2009. So that was, like, 6 years before marriage equality. Pretty backwards time. And, you know, eventually it came out that she was trans, and or she was, you know, a woman that whole time, or a girl. And I remember in college, like, talking to my college roommate about that in our very cramped quarters. It was this very strange, it was like the most private conversation of all time, because it was about this person who we had shared a lifetime together with, and nobody else really knew. And but I still, like, I was like, you know, when Jotaro, when she did this, and he kind of like winced, and it was that moment where it was like the test, you know? Because this guy was like, you know, he was a nice guy, he was a liberal, but like he just had a certain way about him that like new ideas take time. And like, of course, like, it's, you know, it's our buddy, it's Kenny in this case, it's Kenny, god damn it, it's Ken. But it was, yeah, so it's definitely a test for people who are coming from the outside in. Not a real test, but it is a test. And I think that it is important, however foolish it may seem, to recognize the feelings of these people who have to, quote unquote, have to deal with it. Of course, there are people who just like, oh, like how, like, why is Leonard like putting this on me? It's like, yeah, that's a hardship, man. That's a real hardship.
My night is ruined.
Yes, my whole night is ruined. Because I think the only real hardship is the kind of like the peer pressure of like doing it, or trying to, like, being in your position and trying to talk to people and be comfortable using those the proper language around other cishet people. Because like it kind of, you know, it's kind of hard to break from a norm. And but again, like, there's obviously more at stake here than our hurt feelings, even if, you know, whatever those are. And that's the thing to always keep in mind. And I think that we're talking about this topic tonight, and we should be talking about it perhaps every night, because there's a lot to consider, and it's very, you know, you're talking a little bit before we start rolling cameras about how, like, this is going to be a pretty tough conversation, and I think it's because transphobia isn't very simple. It's not really, it's not necessarily, it's not black and white, but it's shared by a lot of otherwise good people. Like, in this conversation, we will criticize feminists and we will criticize, like,
Yes.
liberals and shit. You know, that's hard, and that's not our station, or lane, or however.
We have to.
We're all playing a MOBA or something. Yeah, I guess it's our duty. It's like we're Batman at the end of. Have you guys ever seen The Dark Knight? It's a pretty badass movie. but yeah, we have to be the hero that Gotham needs or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I want to say that, like, at the risk of sounding too heroic, lest I do so. I mean, I said in the previous episode of this podcast that as much of an ally as it was, I still felt weirded out when a guy came on to me at work one time. I was on a date with somebody a few years ago, and she offhandedly referenced that she was bisexual. I think at the time I kind of recoiled then. It's just one of those things where, like, I don't feel that I'm like 1,000%, you know, I'm fully capable of reconciling the trans community in my heart, because I still have very limited engagement with them as a community. And like, we're going to talk, you know, like, as you say, we're going to criticize the left, as we don't mind doing ever, and talk about how, as we're going to get into how, like, allies can be the most deadliest enemy of all when it comes to the trans community. And I think this continuous education and engagement with that will just kind of water that down to, hopefully, it'll be extinguished. But you know, like our experiences aren't our degrees for talking about this necessarily. There's a sort of, you know, our how we come to this limited language, which I know you know.
Yeah, definitely. And this is a conver I mean, this is like, you know, trans issues, like, the only reason, or one of the reasons we feel like we can talk about it is because the bar is pretty goddamn low. Like, there's a lot to be improved upon, such that even we can recognize that there's problems. And so I think, I don't know where to begin on this one. Do you think we should just kind of lay out, like,
Well, do you think, like, just straight up, I was imagining, yeah, I see, you, just saying the definition of transgender by way of the GLAAD.org,
All right.
definition.
Yeah, I think that's a useful starting point. I guess I'll just go through this real quick. So according to glad.org, there's a trans FAQ, or FAQ, I guess is the cool kids might call it, and they describe, or they define transgender as a term used to describe people whose gender identity differs from the sex they were assigned at birth. Gender identity is a person's internal personal sense of being a man or a woman, or boy or girl. For some people, their gender identity does not fit neatly into those two choices. For transgender people, the sex they were assigned at birth and their own internal gender identity do not match. And now, there's many, many levels to the reaction to that definition, and the first is, okay, or the first is actually, I don't accept that, and I am a better scientist than you. And that's, you know, that's like DEFCON 1 or DEFCON 0 level transphobia.
Yes.
And then there's the reaction, which is, okay, I agree with that, but then you just kind of don't, like, it falls out of your mind, because, you know, you can talk the talk, and you can be liberal and identify that way and say that you're all for one and all that shit, like perhaps we do on this podcast, but then you will have a test, right? And maybe you'll see somebody you like on Twitter who's being criticized by a trans activist for a slight you don't perceive, and then you take a certain side. There are ways to measure intolerance, and you have to measure them. You know, you have to actually look for those moments and look forward to them, because you can't just kind of whirl around on Twitter and just kind of think that you're better. You have to know you're better, like in the Matrix, I think, to reference back.
That's probably the Matrix.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a good point. And I feel it's, because there's still confusion. I feel that I understand like the difference between. I mean, I know I understand the difference between gender and sex. I learned that in feminist theory, and it's not. I don't think it's very difficult to withstand. It's one of those things. I say that, but it's one of those things where we learn that sex assignment at birth isn't as clear cut as human history has kind of made it out to be. It's very much on a spectrum that I don't completely understand, but it is a spectrum. So when people are born, they come into life, but the sex assignment that they have isn't the end all be all, which is where we're seeing a lot of. A lot of people and children, you know, go through sexual reassignment procedures younger and younger in life, and that is it's one of those things where I've seen readily people like liberal allies say, oh, we don't want to, you know, blah 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 blah, indoctrinate children so young or whatever. And then there's an article we might reference about the Pope and how children are being educated on trans issues. Being seen as indoctrinating, but that's sort of like the reality of the real nitty gritty science of it, right? It's not indoctrinated to a way of life. That's just how we come to understand the many flavors of life. Essentially, it's not just there's a difference between being alive and being dead, and like the being alive and being dead is different from the like your sex organs, because they're very much fluid. I don't know if I mentioned that before, but that's one of those things that people need to understand, that it's not going to be a clear cut case of either you're a man or a woman. Sometimes it is just different, and of course, how you feel in your own heart and how you feel in your own mind and how you feel coming up in life is very different than how people decided to treat you coming up, and that's sort of like the number one issue with it.
Yeah, and I think that maybe a way to kind of sink this definition into one's mind is to kind of imagine yourself in it or something, or like, because I feel like you can see that and just kind of read the words, but to kind of turn the definition onto yourself or something, like basically that I think some people's problems with this definition is that it's kind of invasive, because it involves you, no matter who you are, because it involves sex and everybody has a sex. But I think that that's kind of liberating, and if people think about it that way, that like, oh, I too am part of this, that I exist on that spectrum too, I think that's a huge deal. And to really explore like what that means for you, I think that could not only lead you down an interesting path late at night, I don't know, or whatever, but also help you kind of realize that everybody is the same, that to some in some regard, like we are all transgender, or that we are all, I mean that's obviously reductive, but to, you know, that we all exist on the spectrum.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And that was sort of like a lifting the blinds and the sun is shining in my face, ah, kind of moment. But that's very much the reality.
Yeah.
So then from that point, I mean, do we get into like, okay, so we established that there's a trans community that's large and I think people can reckon with. From there, should we get into like the statistics, which are probably like the first thing we think of when we think of like transphobia?
Yeah, I think it's important to kind of lay out the stakes, I suppose, and the direness of the situation.
Right. Let's see. I on this Office for Victims of Crime tab that the there's a lot of statistics going on. It's all kind of like terrible.
Yeah.
In 2011, the Injustice at Every Turn, a report of National Transgender Discrimination Survey, found that 12% of transgender youth report being sexually assaulted in K through 12 settings by peers or educational staff. 13% of African American transgender people surveyed were sexually assaulted in the workplace, and 22% of homeless transgender individuals were assaulted while staying in shelters. I know that one in two transgender individuals are sexually abused or assaulted at some point in their lives. 32% of African American transgender people are assaulted while they're in police custody. 15% of non-black transgender individuals are sexually assaulted. 5 to 9% of transgender survivors of sexual assault are from the police. 10% are from healthcare professionals. And that's another thing too. Like a lot of this is can be attributed to people who sought or put on the airs of providing care for these people. Sorry, I probably should have highlighted these. 50% of people who died in violent hate crimes against LGBT were transgender women. The other half are male who were gender nonconforming, and sexual assault and or genital mutilation was a frequent occurrence. Yeah.
After the murder.
17. Yeah.
Or
Let's
before,
see.
actually, I see now.
17% of all reported violent hate crimes against LGBTQ people were directed against those who identified themselves as transgender, with most 11% of all hate crimes identifying as transgender women. The remainder identified as transgender men, gender queer, gender questioning, or intersex. In 2009, 53% of LGBTQ hate crime victims were people of color. 22 anti-LGBTQ hate crime murders documented by the NCAVP. That year, 79% of the victims were people of color. 50% 11 individuals of 2009 murders tracked were transgender women. Of those, 9 were people of color, 82%. Of the other 11 murders of gender nonconforming people, 5, 45% were people of color. There's also the intimate partner violence where people will hook up with a trans person and then like attack or kill them for fear of being shamed for doing so. So you show that in that between 20 and 35% of LGBTQ couples experience domestic violence. Another 50% of transgender people surveyed had been hit by a primary partner after coming out as transgender. LGBTQ youth report a 30% incidence of dating violence compared to a 9% of for heterosexual students. 1 in 5 LGBTQ victims of intimate partner violence or sexual assault get help from service providers. Those are the stakes. Your ignorance and your, well, why are they mad at me? That's ruined my night. Bullshit. Really doesn't compare to the kind of the lives that are at stake. And this is one of those things where education and communication save lives because, of course, there's no, how would you say, like, education can certainly preempt and prevent hate, but the hate I'll probably talk about is so like kind of ingrained in, I guess, sociology that there's a lot of reverse engineering going on. But I think, as we say, like education and communication are always the key. And I think those statistics, those better be a very good, a good enough starting point to kind of for people to kind of just stop and listen to the issues that are out there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess the next step would to kind of be like, why do all these things happen? But yeah, I mean, statistics like that, like, hopefully they are disquieting or quieting or however, but it's
Unsettling.
unsettling. And I think it's just like chances are, like, the trans person or the trans people you know, like, you know, this is applied to them. And, like, that's a cause for alarm. And, yeah, again, like, I get it. It sucks to, like, have your voice silenced or your feelings not recognized or whatever. But, yeah, it is important to note that there's so much, not that it's necessarily more important than your feelings, but maybe it's more urgent, and maybe you could believe that it's more important than your feelings, or however, but, yeah. Like, to the question of, like, why do these things happen, why are those statistics like that, I think a lot of it has to do, well, the first thing we have here is, the education, and the fact that we just don't, like, a lot of transphobia just comes from that, like, crazy ignorance, which is just, like, no, transgender women are just guys in a wig. I just saw that pop up as a comment on that Playboy article where Noah Berlasky interviews Zinnia Jones. I guess they do, like, weird social media pop-up comments. That is a common thing. That's obviously still happening in 2017. And how could it not in our current political climate? Or cultural climate, I should say, as influenced by certain things.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, like there is, I mean, obviously when people think of the whole bathroom crap, it's like, you know, we're doing this to protect the children, you guys, you know, because like trans women will be preying, or really men preying on little girls, which is just like this, you know what that is. That's how ridiculous that is. Rather than taking the humanity of a person, people prefer to take in like how it will affect them, how it will affect, you know, their sexuality as well. Considering, you know, the whole intimate partner violence, a lot of this, I think, what can be easily recognized is not only the transphobia but the homophobia and misogyny that are ingrained in transphobia. I think transphobia is almost like, Not to make light of it, but it's sort of like, you know, like the new evolution of, you know, combining homophobia with misogyny, and that's one of those things. It's one of those things where, like, I think people kind of just think about sex in a very machismo way, where like when you can't reconcile a woman for who she is, no matter how she was assigned at birth. Of course, there's education goes into it, but like when they kind of see that as being played against. And of course, there's also the very transphobic nature of that being expressed through media and jokes and stuff. It is sort of like being fooled into sleeping with a guy is sort of like the lingua franca of transphobia, in essence. And I guess that's how it's normalized through like, you know, attacking men at their sexuality. Oh no. Or it's just cishet men.
Right, yeah.
Where do we go from here? I guess that's where we're on now. How much would you? I mean, I guess we kind of just said it, but like, to what extent do you think toxic masculinity plays into it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like the only discernible, as far as, you know, men go. That's the only discernible motive I can see, which is essentially just, yeah, that next step of gay panic. Because it's like, I don't. Well, first of all, like, the male gaze is very, very discriminatory, as we know. It's a very narrow bend, or narrow margin of error, where, you know, I think I just saw an interview with Ashley Graham on Seth Meyers last night, where, you know, that's like the plus size model. She, you know, that's like a very revolutionary thing, and that thing's been going around the internet lately of the guy who is like, I yes, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I love my curvy wife.
So it's like, it's outstanding that, you know, because if you're on Twitter and you follow mostly like liberal men, it is kind of it's nice to remember that men can be like even worse than that. Like, their standards are so low. That, like, that's laudable. Loving your wife is laudable.
quote for truth.
But it's, yeah, so, like, that's what we're dealing with. Like, it's even, like, you know, past 35, like, women stop being attractive. It's, you know, in America, it's like, okay, well, you start being attractive at 14, let's say, and then you're from 30, yeah. And maybe Japan is even worse or something.
I don't know. Yeah, yeah, I was talking
about
it.
That. But So yeah, like that's not a good starting point. And so then when we kind of so obviously like that's part of where homophobia comes from. Like it is absolutely anathema to the culture that your father handed down to you to be attracted to a man. So that's not going to happen. And then when it's transgender, like not only do you think of them as a man, but you think of them also as this kind of like red Chinese agent infiltrating the other side and like being all skeevy. And then the other element of weird science, I guess, the surgeries you don't understand, the pills you don't really get. And then of course the dialogue surrounding it, which you think of as not only invasive but exclusionary, because it's invading you, it's making you say Leonard when you don't want to say Leonard, or in this case like Kimmy or something for trans women. That's like every single box of intolerance is checked when we match trans women to the male gaze. So yeah, I mean, this is a very powerful, very outward instance where transphobia, like that's the psychology underneath it. And unfortunately it's one of those cases where it's like, to solve transphobia we have to solve toxic masculinity. Like that's not fucking fair. Like we can't just do that. That was like the last boss. We're still on like level 5. So that sucks. But I think that maybe that could kind of be an inroad into examining toxic masculinity. And I think, you know, so I guess maybe we could just throw this question out to kind of get us, unless you had some thoughts on that, actually, before we start there on that side question.
Well, I was going to say that when I think about this, it's like, I don't know, to examine how I feel about a woman, it's just like, I guess there are those, like, you know, historical codifiers, which, you know, signal, you know, the men's appreciation of the female body, whatever, like the softness and the whatever. And they just imagine that being innate towards a woman when I was obviously without the education that sex is fluid, then they can't see that in a man. They can't, you know, see, you know, despite that those jokes like, well, your hands are rather soft for a man or whatever. And cause I've talked about like my anxiety or apprehension and like, you know, potentially dating a trans woman before, and I recognize it for what that is, and it's something that I want to get past, because it's based on toxic masculinity by way of really appreciating its heterosexuality, for lack of a better phrase. It's that way of like, you know, I enjoy being attracted to this, so I don't want my attraction to, I don't want to change my attraction, you know, where it's like, but it's essentially the same in that sense. You're not really changing it because trans women are still women. And that also has to do with like, or that kind of blends into like certain feminists saying that trans women aren't women, which is a whole other topic that we may or may not get into. But I think that's the case, like where toxic masculinity comes down to like, you know, the valuing of very strong sexuality. And, I think that I actually think that leads into like the interview that
yes,
Zanita Jones, that my old pal and boss Noah Black, I mean, he did this is a really good interview that he did for Playboy, considering Zanita Jones, because she went up against Lacey Green, who I'll get into in a little bit, about basically like on Twitter about an argument about, and she was misquoted saying that she basically said that, quote, I don't see a problem with telling straight guys who are exclusionary of trans women partners that they should try to work on that. And she's kind of misquoted as for people to say, you know, she's saying men have to sleep with trans women to blah, blah, blah. And like, that's not what she said. And she kind of gets into like the dangers and, you know, the negative qualities of men, like regretting being attracted to trans women, because men are attracted to trans women, but they don't want you to know it, essentially. Yeah. Let's see if I can find any key points in her article. This will be put up on the page, but I mean, I think it's a very basic point. It's one of those things where she says they should kind of just work through it rather than just, you know, like force selective breeding or whatever. She talks about how, like as we say, we presume, or many men presume trans women to be like guys in dresses. They don't think of them as women. They don't consider the identity politics of it, or the identity of it. They don't consider the I guess that's really it. The dehumanization of it. And there's like, there's pride in saying, I can never be attracted to a trans woman or whatever. Whereas like, you probably have, justly speaking. Trying to go through this. Is there, off the top of your head, was there any point that you wanted to bring up from the article? It's not terribly long.
No, it's not. And I think it's not to say it's basic, but it does cover this, like, it puts that, you know, very, very important point out there, that, like, really didn't need clarifying, but obviously it got obfuscated. Let's see. Yeah, so Berlasky asks, is part of this people wanting to publicly show that they hate trans women or that they can never be attracted to trans women? And she says, I think a lot of this really does have a very performative aspect to it. You know, it's just more of that posturing. And that's definitely a part of toxic masculinity. But in this case with Lacey Green, like, I don't know what it was, really. But, you know, for the men in this instance, like, yeah, it's very important that you do not think that I would be attracted to trans women, just as it was and still is very important that you do not think that I might be gay. Like, that's a huge thing. And I think the insidious part of that is that it can kind of, it's like locker room talk. You know, it doesn't read as transphobic, just like, you know, oh, I'm not attracted to that. But like, that's like a symptom of something greater, or something greater is a symptom of that or something. Like, everything is connected, you know, with transphobia. Like, you can't just pick and choose what you want to think about a certain thing, because you're not the authority on it. Like, implicit bias is your master. Like, you don't understand how transphobic you are. So you got to be really careful. And when it comes to Lacey Green, like, she might just be trying to clarify an issue, or she thinks that she's like trying to engage in discourse. But when she's over and over again targeting a trans woman and tone policing her, there might be something else going on. And in that case, specifically for a very a vaunted sex educator and feminist, like, that's a lot of, like, not that she thinks she's like the shit, but there's not a lot of cause for like second guessing. And that's, you know, we all have to do that, no matter how, like, in the shit we get, we always have to second guess. Especially since, like, you know, for a lot of us, like, trans issues are so new. Like, I didn't know a lot of things even this year that I take for granted now. And even, like, again, like, as Donovan was saying, like, the biology stuff, like, that's kind of complicated. Even though it's a very basic idea, a lot of the terminology is a little bit confusing, and not everybody agrees on it. And, like, how could it not be totally agreed on? It's science. Like, there's just, like, you know, it's weird. But, again, like, maybe you just have to take a certain leap with trans people because they already leapt over, and you just kind of got to go with them. It doesn't have to come down to, like, this huge scientific explanation. Really, you just have to listen to them. Like, God, I'm doing that again. But, like, you know, when trans people say, like, you know, have some respect for me, like, even if they're wrong somehow, like, in 20 years or, like, in 100 years, it's like, oh, actually, transgender was, like, it was a disease, or, like, it was a virus that swept through the nation and affected everybody's psychology and made them think that this thing that was actually fake was real. Like, even if that's the case, which is not, like, what would be the difference if we just were excellent to each other in the meantime, like Bill and Ted? Like, what the fuck? Like, even if you don't believe in it, what is the difference? Like, what are you trying to win the war? And then, like, you just want, like, why do you want trans people to be eliminated so badly? Like, don't you recognize that they're people too? I just, like, ah, oh, man, that's a little, it's a little wacko.
Mm-hmm. First thing, I kind of went back up a bit and, like, kind of going about her point, or the question about, you know, is this part of people wanting to publicly show that they hate trans women or they can never be attracted to trans women? Sort of like the opposite version of that was when Caitlyn Jenner came out. I think it was the Esquire cover. They call me Caitlyn. And I remember Jon Stewart having this thing where, like, people were chomping at the bit to say how attractive she was. I say, oh, man, she looks better than I do. Look at her hair. She looks like this or that. And it was like, okay, guys, you know, it was a thing where, like to profess, you know, they were an ally, they were kind of just, like, objectifying her, which was a small bit kind of funny, because it was kind of so pathetic. But that is part of the problem. It's part of the misogyny kind of goes into it. It's like, you know, once you're a woman now, you're kind of, you their takes on this reality of hating women. Quite frankly, and it's a complicated issue that involves a lot of Because it's hard to reconcile appreciation for difference with making difference the big thing. That's I think that is truly difficult when you're brought up a certain way. But it's one of those things that we just kind of have to figure out. Now, to your point about how we should just learn to appreciate people, that's very much the issue that we should I think at this point get into with our president's trans ban or his tweeted trans ban of the military. Which I have to say, of course, this entire year has been just like a pile of bullshit. Just speaking up that, not to have virtue signal or anything, but like that really like infuriated me because I was the first thing I saw when I woke up, and it was one of those things where like it was so very much what it was. Very, it was like people say it was a purge. It was this gigantic, bigoted, discriminatory thing. That was so half-hearted in its execution that the Joint Chiefs and people working in the Pentagon were like, no, because this did not go through proper channels. And it was so obvious that it was like done in the face of winning over like the worst offenders of voters. That's I think to me like that congratulations to that. That did one better for like the bathroom bill in terms of just blanket. Prejudice. It's very much the kind of, thank you for serving the war by people, but now you're still going to be denied bathroom and water fountains and shit. Yeah. That kind of thing. So what did you think about that when that happened?
It didn't occur to me at the time, but it was, it's an echo of something that's just always going on. Like legislators in red states especially will always just kind of push these like kind of bullshit bills through that don't actually do anything, but just kind of give a middle finger to trans people. I think there was something like last year that was going on about this. It was on the state level where it might have been a bathroom bill, but it was just like it didn't actually change any law. But it was just like, but we don't include you. Like, it was just like this total like fuck you, like people using, the political system to just like voice their bullshit as, they're politicizing politics. It sucks. But, in this case also, it's just the same thing. It's like, whether or not this pans out, and I think a lot of people were upset that he's trying to enforce law through Twitter, I don't think that that's necessarily the issue here. I mean, it's an issue, sure, but, when Trump is eventually impeached or he resigns within the next 1 or 2 years, like, we're going to look back and he's still going to be the worst president of all time, either because of ratings or whatever, but I don't think there's necessarily a lot of concrete things that you can really place on his shoulders. Like, he wasn't Andrew Jackson. He wasn't, like, part of a genocide. I mean, he could still, like, end the world tomorrow, because we're, as we record this, we're again on the brink of war with North Korea. In which case, they would bomb South Korea and I guess Guam now. And that sucks, obviously. Regardless, like, so if that doesn't come to pass, and I don't think it will, hopefully, again.
Oh, which? World War III or like him being impeached?
World War III.
Okay.
I don't know enough about it, but I just believe in Summer Brennan. Again, there's not too much concrete, I think the number one thing that he's doing is creating an atmosphere where all kinds of intolerance can kind of run wild. And I think we've seen spikes in crimes that specifically have to do with hatred. And, he's just creating this atmosphere where it's, like, okay to be transphobic. And, creating an atmosphere where it's not okay to be transphobic sounds scary, but just think about that for a second. And a military ban, like, to realize that, because I didn't honestly know that there were, like, a lot of, like, thousands of trans people in the military, like, and even one of the SEAL Team 6 members was transgender, or is transgender, and, like what, how, like, how, like, as the president, you should probably realize that that's the case. How are you going to do that, first of all? But second of all, it's so shitty. Like, I just can't... I mean, that's, like, why... Again, it's another instance of the stakes, right? We got to rally around, people who are in at risk, and trans people are living in a country that it is against them.
Well, thankfully, he was so idiotic that, like, this didn't pass because it was through a tweet and not through anything else. It was not only was it kind of relieving, but it was also kind of amusing where like the people in charge were like, what the fuck? We didn't hear anything about this. And you actually can't do this because that's how incompetent he fucking is. But, there was a report on Blast it, where is it? It was on the Los Angeles Blade, where the policy actually is, like, you know, kind of getting ground. And there's I think since July, this past July that just passed, there was a lift on the enrollment of trans people in the military. And it's one of those things where, like, it provides obstacles with not only preventing them from coming in, for kicking out the 15,000 that are already in the military, at which point a couple of groups, it was they were the National Center for Lesbian Rights and the GLBTQ Legal Advocates and Defenders that came up with this lawsuit, Doe versus Trump, which basically said that, you know, this is obviously bigoted, and you can't, because the Obama administration made it to where trans people could come out when they were already in the military, they're enrolled. You cannot in America provide rights for people and then rescind rights. That's not how America is structured. So this lawsuit put it to where if the Trump administration or whatever says, "Oh, we know we weren't going to do this," then by basically saying, you know, you can't give us this lawsuit because it's not inactive right now, then it basically also provides the contention that they can never do that lawsuit, because once that comes in, then that lawsuit will be coming. I have it here. There's an article on Slate.com. Will the courts reach the merits of this case? That's a tricky question. Federal courts may not render judgment in a case unless it is ripe. That is, rooted in present controversy rather than based on speculative future events or policies. The government will likely respond to this issue by arguing that the trans ban has not been formalized, let alone implemented. But that argument is a bit of a double-edged sword. As civil rights attorney Sasha Sandberg Champion points out, if the government objects to unripeness grounds, it would effectively hand a victory to the plaintiffs by admitting that it isn't really doing anything. Put differently, if the lawsuit fails because the trans ban isn't right for adjudication, it also succeeds in proving that the trans ban does not yet exist and may not for the foreseeable future. Which is good, as long as this thing just doesn't happen, because the moment that, like, he drunkenly tweeted that, we had a lot of, especially on like late nights, like Trevor Noah, on Seth Meyers, and I think on something else, I'm not sure. But those two shows, definitely, like, we had trans speakers, and I think trans soldiers from the military kind of speak about how, I know one on Trevor Noah had like one, I don't know if it was the Purple Heart or something, but like it was, she won an award that no one had won for like since like World War II. It's one of those things where, like, you know, the Coast Guard and, like, as you mentioned, SEAL Team 6, these are part of our military. This is part of our army. This is part of the army that you want to embolden to make, you know, the greatest in the universe. And this excuse that, you know, oh, it costs like $2 to $4 million to to provide medical stuff for them, as opposed to like the regular like $6 million to do other things, like, you know, Viagra or whatever. This is blanketed moronic bigotry that's made palatable by how stupid it really is. But it's all the same disgusting because it's done by the president of the United States. I every single day, I'm increasingly mad at the people who didn't vote and the people who did. But anyway, it's kind of a thing where like that, as you say, that was the ultimate fuck you to that community. That was, and that was another thing too, not to get too divergently political, but it was very much for this non-ideological president, something that was poured into his ear by guys like Steve Bannon and Ann Coulter, is very much the command from the insane radical right that just will not allow anybody that doesn't look as blonde and blue-eyed as they are. Anyways, any other thoughts on that point? I'm sorry, well, for going.
No, I mean, that's cool. We need that. But at the same time, I was kind of thinking, like, but doesn't a military ban kind of exist in the hearts of all of us to varying degrees, right? Because, you know, I mean, obviously we can get over transphobia, but I think that to just assume, even if you're like a non-practicing transphobe, that it's still there in you, just because, you know, it's not your fault that it's there. It's only your fault when you do something about it. And in this case,
right.
And then people, like, you see people like this, and they like make it a part of their identity, like, for hating trans people so much. You sure make them your business a whole bunch, but it's just like it's really disheartening to see transphobia on that level. At the highest levels of government, like, could you could you imagine like anything like that coming from the previous administration? It's a little wild. And it's just like, well, I mean, that's literally the process of making America great again, which is just make America what it was in a certain year again. And so moving backwards through time, yes, we've made some progress, not much, but now it's time to walk it all back. It's pretty depressing. And I think that's when you kind of need to, point out, like, communities or find communities that you can find who will support you, whether financially or even just morally. Because I know that, the closest thing to an internet community I run in is the Friends from the Internet podcast network, which is primarily Dave Grotz and Joel, who are podcasters, and they do stream video games for charity sometimes. And I think, you know, whenever something really big comes out, they usually do a charity stream. And it's just to kind of like to see people react well to certain things, or as, you know, as they should perhaps, definitely helps. It's really depressing, all the stuff that's coming out of Washington, and it's easy to get kind of sunk in it. So I'd also advise finding a way out, I guess, finding the light in the darkness or what have you.
Right. Yeah, it's absolutely heartening to see, like, guys like Chris Evans and George Kinder, just kind of like, you know, people were trending on Twitter like trans people are not a distraction, because that was the excuse, like they'll distract the military, like the same excuse that they did with women in the military. That you know, the idea that, you know, the worst elements of our community are very much real and not, you know, fabricated by the past. So I do want to kind of go back and kind of get more in depth with the Lacey Green thing.
All right.
Because I feel kind of responsible in doing so, because I actually included a Lacey Green clip way back when, I think during the morality and sexual fantasies episode. I think I included at the end, because I like Lacey Green. I think she's a very informative and ingratiating presence in terms of sex education, and kind of just making things, you know, kind of palatable, and while it also it's like infotainment kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I was really I was disturbed when this kind of, you know, this new era of her persona came out, where she became a lot more critical and questioning of certain arguments when it came to like trans issues or whatever. And this is a woman who's legitimately done videos on like trans identity and like the nature of it. And actually, I have the page up right here just to make sure. She's done you know, videos talking about the bathroom bill, and has had trans people on her channel, and how about intersex. And so, like, this is not somebody who, like, this, you know, was always this abjectly transphobic Donald Trumpian person. But somewhere along the line, she became, I think it's because she was caught in her feelings about being critical about how a lot of angry people were kind of arguing. So she was also talking to more like alt-right people, just kind of get the other perspective. And in that way, she started kind of breaking things down to like basic fact, and started really questioning something that she actually like informed me of like the nature of fluid sexuality, and like whether trans women are legitimate women, which is unfortunate, which is disheartening. And it was that point where she believed that Zinnia, is that her name? Zinnia Green?
Zinnia Jones?
Zinnia Jones had argued that, you know, quote, people should be rubbing her dick and balls all over a straight guy's face until he's into it, which is a misquote. That was kind of her glib response to somebody, rather than actually making a point related to her. Maybe straight people should just work out, you know, how they feel about dating a trans person. And this kind of just really kind of sunk her ship. I mean, it's not necessarily because she still has followers and stuff, but it's one of those instances of a leftist ally kind of being turned and kind of separating the issues, I think. Maybe not. Maybe that's the wrong way to say it, but, like, you know, she's turning trans issues into a feminist issues and trying to taking the feminist side by excluding trans people, which sucks. And this also leads to the idea that we'll get into, trans or the left are very much as harmful as anybody. And I know you had an article about this on the establishment. Do you want to talk about this point about how I guess like we can kind of get it, because we never actually mentioned the term TERFs and stuff.
I think this has more to do with TERFs than the Allies necessarily. And you know, this is trans exclusion and radical feminist. That's a very tricky area. And I happen to host a YouTube channel that talks about a show with a white lead, and it's like a this very feminist show, and of course it attracts a lot of white women who are feminist. And in one of the videos I said that it's not like, you know, like I think the point was that men should probably stop criticizing women because they don't understand them. Like that was it, that was the point. And then I also said, like, I understand that there's a lot of bad women out there, for example, like Michelle Malkin and Megyn Kelly. And,
oh, I remember that.
and then I said trans exclusionary radical feminist. And yes. Somebody really took exception to that, and she was actually not like a typical like archetypal white feminist. I think she was from Brazil, where they're, you know, it's actually interesting to know that internationally, like, a lot of these definitions really are change and are different, even like when it comes to any issue like race or sex or sexism or whatever. But you know, this person was like, the TERF itself is a derogatory. You're not supposed to say that. And radical feminism isn't necessarily about trans exclusion, although I don't necessarily identify with radical feminism. It was this weird argument that I got into with this person, but it's the point is that it's not our place to say, as me and Donovan, or any guy, and I know it's like, you know, for guys out there who like saw that Lacey Green stuff and saw a soft mark, just hold back a little bit, you know, let somebody else do that. because, you know, we don't want to fall into that dogpile mentality that we talked about way back when it came to, you know, the Steven Universe fan art. Like, you don't want to fall into that crap.
Right.
Because, yeah, you see a dogpile happening and you think, oh, that's attractive, I'm going to do that. Don't. Especially when it comes to, like, women. As bad as you might think Lacey Green is, just she doesn't deserve your ire as a cishead man, a man, because somebody else is taking care of that. And you know, with TERFs, it's like, they're pretty bad people. And, like, just the idea, like, I don't understand. Like, there seems to be two levels, which is the kind of people who would accept the term trans exclusionary radical feminist because that's their ideology, and they write blogs about how, you know, trans women don't count and shit. And then there's the people who are feminist and they don't like the idea of people criticizing feminism. And even just putting that aside, like, the idea of the trans exclusionary radical feminist makes logical sense, even if it makes no, like, human or emotional sense, because the issue at the heart, or what the heart of the issue is, you didn't live my life, so stop trying to co-opt my shit.
It's a lot like the Rachel Dolezal thing in that way.
Yes, yeah. And then for an Asian guy like me, like, I might object to when people say that Aziz Ansari represents Asian people. Like, it's that problem that you run into when lines get a little blurry, when it's just, and it's the saddest thing, because it's just us playing into these labels that we're trying to fight against, and then we're like, well, we've actually come to like some of these labels. You know, I shared that article about Chimamanda Ngozi, the author of We Should All Be Feminists. She's obviously not the only one. There was an Australian, very loud feminist critic who's going on and on about that day in, day out. It's crazy, but it makes sense in that way that toxic masculinity makes sense, even if we don't agree with it. And I think that it's crazy. I guess the issue is kind of a matter of definitions. Like, it is true that they didn't live your life, that a trans woman who had lived like Bruce Jenner up until the age of like 58 or however old Caitlyn Jenner is,
right.
Did not live your life. But she was living her life. You know, she was trapped in the body of a guy, not understanding, or, you know, maybe not understanding, but like dealing with this like horrible situation where you can't express yourself ever. Like, she, the first time Caitlyn Jenner, and believe me, I know, Caitlyn Jenner's a terrible person also. And she's a terrible spokesperson for trans issues. but, you know, she didn't get to express herself for the first time until she was, you know, that old, a few years ago. Like, that's insane. Like, that's a shitty situation. That's a terrible life. Just because it's not the same as your issue doesn't make it not shitty. And maybe you agree with that. But I don't understand why you gotta hate on this person and why you gotta fuel the fire burning in the heart of Ian Miles Chong, that piece of shit. I want to gouge his eyes out.
Maybe I should. Ooh, I don't know about that.
I think he might have been mentioned in one of these articles. Oh, the Lacey Green one. Yeah, if you scroll down far enough, you'll find him eventually. Yeah, he's that guy who's like always coming up. He's just like, he just says, like, he's kind of like the Max Landis for the new generation. He's just, oh,
no. God.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'm looking through the Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie thing, and because I was unaware, so I'm learning this kind of in real time. She says, from the very beginning, I think it's been quite clear that there's no way I could possibly say that trans women are not women. It's the sort of thing to me that's obvious. So I start from that obvious premise. Of course, there are women, but in talking about feminism and gender and all that, it's important for us to acknowledge the differences in experience of gender. That's really what my point is. So I think she's not meaning to exclude trans women, but she's just trying to like set out the fact of the difference of life experience. But in that way, it comes across as exclusionary.
Yeah, I just don't understand what the point is. Like, yeah, it's different, but I mean, why would you even want to conform all women to having to live to this one experience that is womanhood? I mean, isn't that the point of the second
thing? Yeah,
I've
only
read
yeah.
5 pages of it.
Pardon me.
It's a big book, man. But yeah, I mean, again, it's just like, why draw that line? I mean, is it just purely that emotional response of, I don't think Aziz Ansari is Asian, that kind of thing? Is it just purely that emotional thing where you're not even thinking about it on the level of the greater good? And like, I hate to say that so much of this is like emotional responses, but I think that's where we're at. I don't want to say it when it comes to like women, because that's traditional sexism. But, you know, it's just like sometimes like people piss us off in a certain way and we don't react in a way that we might 20 years from now or hopefully less time. Because, you know, like in the course of running this YouTube channel, like I get like a lot of comments, especially recently, that like just send me over the fucking edge. And I have to like really work through it before if I'm going to comment at all in response. And not to say that like I have better willpower than the woman who wrote. Or the woman who actually has a writing career as a feminist, just because she fucked up when it comes to trans issues, like I'm sure she could come around. You know, everybody has that capacity, and maybe she has. But you know, it's just like fuck. It just seems so not arbitrary, because yes, there is a distinction to be made, but why bother making the distinction? Like
it's not worth saying. Yeah, it's not worth making that distinction, because it lends itself to exclusionary tactics. It's like you say, it's like when people kind of like jump on the hate train. It's yes, I don't like Lacey Green either. It's that kind of bandwagoning that finds togetherness in hatred, essentially. Hmm. I understand that there are arguments to be had and there are battles to fight, but I mean, you said before we don't go forward leaving people behind, especially when it's just a matter of not so much semantics, but like language and understanding which language to use. And when that language is sort of misspoken, people get pissed off when they feel that like they are actively being taken out of context, like Zinnia Jones did. It's one of those things, and we talk about this, you and I talk about this all the time. Like, you know, we don't want to feel like our life experience is invalid because it's not the one being discussed like right now, you know?
Yeah.
It's like Aries Sparks, you know, throwing shade on Key and Peele because they don't ascribe to the kind of blackness that he does, or Charlamagne doing the same to like Donald Glover, yeah. Or to you know, that kind of infighting stuff that does nobody any good. And it wasn't really an issue back in the 70s. It's that kind of thing. Like you say with Aziz Ansari, I don't know much about that, but I feel like I understand it. It's that kind of thing where saying from my station these people aren't what they claim to be innately. That's not how we move forward. And especially if they're not doing any harm to like that kind of identity. Now, of course, there, you know, women's issues and trans issues are. Do I say? Why am I asking you? I want to say complicated. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. You know, even in essence, you want to be right. And if that's not right to say, then let's just move on from there rather than concentrate on how wrong that was. I guess. Now I'm tone policing. This is difficult, but we don't stop at how difficult it is. We try to kind of move forward without catching feelings and kind of getting caught up in how upset we are. Kind of just work on establishing and clarifying rather than bitching and moaning, I guess.
Right. Yeah, and this is kind of like the point that we make with the least fire in our hearts. But not that it's not important, but the only reason I would have ever thought it was important, I mean, at least I think, I don't have that much faith in myself, is just because I saw a lot of trans women critics and writers talking about that, because it just always comes up. Like for us, like, there are definitely better targets to focus on, because it's, at that point, it does be kind of, you know, I trust ourselves in this arena to not turn this into like an ego match where we're matching ourselves against like actual professional feminists, which I guess technically a person, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce her name, but I guess that's what she would be because she gets paid to be a feminist. But yeah, so I guess maybe we just move on.
But where to do we move on? We've talked about like the military ban, the bathroom thing, the definition. Do we want to make more of a point on misgendering, or what say you?
Well, I think you were going into the false allies thing before I cut you off with a ninja slide.
Shredder here. Oh yeah. The false allies thing. There was an article that you provided on the establishment about why trans activists can't trust the left, and it is by Sam Riddle. I'm sure that's how you pronounce that. And she talks about how she went to a pride parade in 2015. Where they're very much, you know, pro trans rights and trans women of color, and then like I guess 2 hours later there was a riot that kind of started up from people protesting the hashtag No Justice No Pride that called attention to violence against trans women of color, deportations, and the ongoing corporatization of pride. There's a conflict with the police, and when the police action started happening, people were cheering the police and not standing up for those protesters and trans people of color. And that was the very real instance of, you know, the cisgender left very much being an ally to trans rights until it was inconvenient. That's the thing that I think it cuts – I would imagine it cuts at trans rights the hardest because trans rights is most vulnerable these days in comparison to which is saying a lot compared to a lot of people of sexual minorities. But this is one of those things where, like, you know, it's like the intimate partner violence and people trying to help people survivors of trans violence, you know, kind of inflicting violence on their own, that kind of thing where, like Lacey Green, allies kind of come out and just turn on a dime. Or not even so much turn on a dime, but kind of just quickly, very quickly regress into picking and choosing sides when it's convenient. Like, it'll basically be after you and I do this episode, the next episode is how we don't like trans people and they suck kind of thing. That kind of thing going on.
Right.
And it's one of those things that I, as unaware of this instance as I was, I had no problem believing it happened because I've seen it all the time. Because like I say, people really enjoy taking sides and hating on things, much as podcast is on that. But we try to do it in the word of love. But what are your thoughts on the turncoat left?
I think it just kind of goes back to that very basic thesis about implicit bias, which is just that we all have it. Like that line about how like we can support trans issues until it becomes inconvenient is like so I don't know, like provocative or resonant. It's just like, yeah, like that's it is not only disheartening, but it just makes so much sense. Like, of course, like how did that not just like be a thing that, like, when I first was born, that was just there. It's just so obvious. Like, because that's always been the case with everything. It's really kind of hard to step outside your experience and help somebody else out when it's, you know, going out of your way. And even in a case where it's like liberalism, like a lot of people who are liberals and identify that way might be doing so because they're under fire and they need to fight for themselves, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when your only experience is fighting for yourself, then maybe you don't know how to help somebody else out. And so when it seems like they're kind of being an antagonist, they become the enemy. And maybe that kind of leads into black and white thinking. And, you know, the rapidity or the ease with which we fall into an us versus them is frightening. It's kind of fascinating in that, again, anthropological way, or I guess it's just a psychological issue, but we're othering these people, and it's just like, what the fuck do they do? But in the case of trans exclusion and radical feminists, like, they are seemingly opposed to the tenets of feminism, which is all about women, and you are men who are pretending to be women. So, like, obviously that's a case where a perception would be you are against us. And in a case like this, where it was like about, I mean, that was kind of like an instance where it kind of clicked for that writer, but then she was able to see it everywhere. And so I think it's just like, it's kind of a call to just be chill about and like let certain things slide. Don't be tone policing and all that as much as you maybe think you should or whatever. And like, I get it. Like, I mean, I feel like I've been having this conversation since high school or I guess college it would have been, of like, we can't just let, you know, people fighting for civil rights get away with everything, because then where will we be? But I don't know. Maybe, I mean, honestly, I don't really see the hell under our slippery slope there. Like, honestly, like, I don't know, like, I guess just think about the instances where a trans person pissed you off, and just kind of work backwards from that and kind of realize where they were coming from and realize that your feelings are valid, but they're not really yours in a sense. They were authored by a patriarchal hand of society hovering above,
yes.
Like
yes.
At the beginning of Berserk. And you know, they become yours, but you can let them go at any time. You know, you don't have to let them define you, especially when it comes to transphobia. Like, I don't think you want to put that on the CV of your psychology or however.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, like, even talking about like radical feminists hating on men is or not men, but like hating on trans women. It's like, you know, they see them as quoting as women. These feminists who hate men, you can kind of even go at it that way. It's like, I think when you find your hook in progressive groups as hating on others, as that's sort of your gateway into it. That's leading down the wrong path and basically poison from the inside, essentially. And that's very tempting to do. And it's one of those things where it's like love conquers all. There are shorthands and ways to get in certain things. This shouldn't be it, essentially. And there's probably should do an episode on like, I guess, like, liberal politics and how these times are very, very difficult. And being, you know, a liberal, because you can't be a conservative these days. But it's one of those things where, like, this is an instance of liberal politics utterly failing a community that they proudly purport to defend and be allies to or ally themselves with. And it's a common instance. And there is a certain commonality of that. Of course, you know, you relate that to how, you know, progressive, like, white progressives have failed civil rights activists, and of course the gay and lesbian community, and let's say like immigrants like that. This is a subsection of this sort of topic, which is unfortunate, but very, very real, and requires our attention. I don't know. I think certain instances are relatively, like you wrote down, I guess, people, I wasn't aware of this, but like, I guess George Takei said transgenders and not transgender, and people didn't like that. But he said that in response to like the Trump military ban, right? So, you know, as a cishet man, it's my duty to defend. Actually, George Takei is gay, so it's not the same thing. But like, I mean, like, I would say that you just correct and move on rather than, you know, spend your day aiming to destroy. But in that way, like, am I getting caught up in like that or whatever, or do I not, or is I even paying attention to that instance, the lesser of two evils?
Right. I mean, in that case, especially, like, I think a lot of it was that kind of, like, a reinforcement of, like, oh my god, trans people are so uppity. And if you're on the outside looking in at any civil rights issue, like, obviously the people who are fighting to save their lives, their own lives, will seem uppity, if you want to call it that. But in this case, it was like, George Takei, I think he was just saying that, like, transgenders are not a distraction or whatever. He's kind of doing that. And obviously, you know, when George Takei tweets about politics, it gets pretty big virally. And then somebody else was like, in all caps, like, we are not called transgenders. Stop doing this, you know, that kind of thing. And then that went viral. And it was just kind of like, again, like, I mean, there would be tone policing on my part to say anything about it. But it was just like, I can see, again, where transphobia can come from on the liberal side. Because, like, you know, you somebody would look at that and be like, all right, you know, just settle down, class. Like, George Takei, he was, yes, Sulu, he's a pretty awesome guy.
And, yeah, you know, he says, oh my, leave him alone.
He says, oh my, he's on The Simpsons. yeah. But, like, you know, I mean, he's become, like, one of our most visible spokespeople in the Trump era. So, obviously, he's an ally, or he is even just, he just is. But, you know, like, that's not an isolated incident either of, I guess, tone policing. Like, you know, the whole don't misgender me became like a meme among right-wing assholes. Like, you right, trove certain corners of the internet and you'll just see people, like, making these, like, terrible, like, they have no sense of humor. And so, like, their only joke is, did you just misgender me? Or, mm-hmm, like, yeah, like, that's, it's unfortunate. But obviously that comes from something, and that comes from transgender people fighting again to save their lives, and that might look invasive to you, and I don't know what the solution is to that, other than again, it's that other tweet, which was like, I don't know how to explain to you that you should care about other people. Like,
right,
I mean, at some point, like, yes, that's a nice thought, but at some point, for every one of us, caring about other people is hard. There's certain roadblocks that get put up. I think it will always come back to having a person in your life who represents whichever social issue or group that you care about enough to where you don't want to see harm done on anybody because it might cause them harm, or just because you care about their opinion enough to just agree with them unconditionally in the pursuit of social justice. And I think so that's the ultimate. That's the ultimate goal of a podcast like this, is just to say, or of an issue like this, is just to say, surround yourself with representatives, build that mini UN around you. Like, again, the American History X guy did, Derek Black in college. Well, he didn't do that himself. I think that's the overriding key to all these different issues. Maybe, hopefully.
Well, I mean, like we. I think it's a favorite topic of mine of our last several episodes, the whole, you know, the PC thing. This is not necessarily that exactly, but like there was an instance in the GLAAD.org page where and I know there's another link that we had we might put up, but and when it comes to misgendering, if you can't tell a person's gender, you introduce yourself if you care to know and say, I refer to myself as he and him, or she and her, or he, she and her.
She and shim.
That's what I'm out of here. how would you like to be addressed? That's that kind of thing when you're really unsure. If you see somebody, you know, and like they're in the process of transitioning and you misgender them, you just correct yourself and move on. I genuinely don't think some people can help that. But so if someone acts offended, you know, it's their right to be offended, but it's also your right to, I guess, feign ignorance of that. Because this is new. This is one of those things that, like, I feel that, like, we as an overarching society, this isn't necessarily like other civil rights issues. I say that now. I'm ignorant of it, but like I would like to think that this is not as widely discussed as others have been in our past 100 years in terms of, you know, gay rights and African American rights. So there's a lot of misinformation out there. So if you accidentally find yourself being misinformed when you come up against somebody, you just correct yourself and move on. You don't, even if they're mad at you, you don't let that carry your opinion of them, because you have to understand what, you know, that they're going through this sort of thing. Like there's that awful video. I told you about this sometime. Maybe it was on BBX episode or something, but there's this awful video of, like, you know, somebody, like, you know, opening the door and, like, seeing somebody say, "Oh, hello, I'm not so-and-so," whatever, and them being just assailed by all these, like, left politics of, you know, these different orientations or whatever. And it's just like, I'm telling you, you can't think like that, because you got to have a lot more self-esteem and confidence in yourself to kind of educate yourself and move on, so we can all kind of come to this together, rather than, "Look at, though, they're being mean to me." It's like nut up, which, yeah. I know it's not a nice thing to say, but that's kind of where my emotion is right now.
Ovary up.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I said that one time. I think I said ovary up when talking about Sailor Moon. Ah, the good old days.
Oh, man.
But I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, I think it's just, I've seen a lot of people on Facebook, like, people I consider friends, like, share jokes on Facebook, you know, like, "Oh, look at this person on Tumblr, like whining about them being misgendered, or whining about their, you think I'm this, but I'm really this kind of thing," and attacking us harmless straight guys. And it's just like, I fuck off. It's just the pride in scoffing at I guess, the vulnerable group. To just, you know, "I'm not this, I'm just," I don't know. I almost want to kind of divulge and talk about integrating with that, but that should not replace what we're talking about right now. But it's tempting, because it involves anger and hating on people.
Yeah, and I mean, you have really good instincts when it comes to keeping yourself from the brink, and I think it's important that we don't alienate those people, or we don't consider the people who say, who joke about, "Oh, don't misgender me, man. I'm just an Al-Qaeda potato who's bisexual," and they just go on and on about how they're this, and because that's hilarious. That's, mm-hmm. You should be a writer for Seth MacFarlane. You know, we should realize that, you know, shades of them exist in all of us, right? And so, like, when it comes to the example they have on the GLAAD page is, "Hi, I'm Alex, and I use the pronouns he and him. What about you?" Like, for some people, that will never happen in their lifetimes. They will never, ever, those words and that string will never come out of their mouths. And for other people, like, maybe it will someday, but for now, it's super weird. Like, they've never had to do we've never had to do anything like that. I have never had to say, "Hi, my name is Harrison, I go by the pronouns he and him, what about you?" You've never heard me say that. It's strange, and new things can be strange. I don't think that's too wild to say. But I could, you know, if I ever run into a situation, I mean, that's just speculating, that's just whatever, but I could try to do that. But I mean, at the same time, like, I do want to recognize that that is different. And I think that that's, like, I mean, that's, yeah, that's one of the main things that we got to kind of focus on or identify in a conversation like this, which is when the trans issues, when trans rights do become inconvenient, what does that look like for the liberal side, or for whoever is quote-unquote inconvenienced? And how do you kind of de-inconvenience that situation? And in a case like this, where I have to identify the pronouns that you're going to use, I think it kind of goes back to what we were saying in the beginning, which is to kind of see yourself on that spectrum, to realize that nothing is a given anymore, that just because you appear to be you know, Harrison Shute has always looked like a guy except for when he cuts his hair, that's you, that, like, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, you could be anything. And, you know, I think for people who see, you know, the people who are, don't want to be misgendered, the idea of you can be anything is just this kind of, like, speculation. It's science fiction. But it's really, it's in fact science facts. And that's, you know, that rounds back to the education thing, which is that, you know, the sad state of sex education in America is such that we do need a Lacey Green, and she was a revelation. I remember, I think it was like in high school for me, where she had that video about feminism that went viral, and it was fucking phenomenal. It was great. Like, that we needed, you know, she was the Batman in that case. because, you know, we don't learn about any of this shit in school. I remember my health class, it was like, yeah, it was pretty abysmal. And, like, we just, we need to learn the basics about female and male sexuality and biology. And then we need to learn about how specifically that applies to trans issues, that sex exists on a spectrum. And when you accept that, and you really meaningfully accept it, which is to say that you accept that you're a part of that, almost to the intensity that you're like indicted in it, you know, that it, that you are a victim of it too, kind of, not really, but that, you know, it's part of your life now, and you have to deal with that now. Then I think that's when you actually become the liberal ally that you have always claimed you wanted to be, even implicitly. So talk the talk all you want, but that's maybe an inroad to actually walking the walk.
Yeah, I think that, like, when we consider people who are different than us and other them, it's that sort of like, you know, well, we would like to stick up for the little guy, you know, defend the small turtle until they start speaking for themselves, and then we get angry, that kind of thing. That's a way that, like, we've come to interact with that. And there have been instances where I've been made salty by people because they presume me to be a certain way, and I don't consider myself a certain way. But I understand, kind of, I try to understand what's at stake and not make my day about, you know, because I don't know, because at the end of the day, like I'm not necessarily on a stage. I'm not necessarily like I don't have the platform of like a Lacey Green or Donald Trump. So like I'm safe to educate myself and learn and be better for the foreseeable future. The stakes aren't as high for me, but they're still high, and I should recognize the potential of learning that I can help somebody. And basically, you know, and a lot of times helping means to be quiet, and other times helping means to be like, you know, don't stay silent and be loud, and not cheer the police. I know that's a separate issue, but yeah, we're talking a lot about. The commonality of this topic is, like, you know, the failure of the mainstream, I think. And a lot of failure comes from ignorance, but, like, the willful ignorance is kind of like what happens. And that's really my disappointment with Lacey Green, because I'm not saying right now I hate her so much, but it is disappointing how, you know, a not insignificant amount of people have kind of tried to set her straight about what she's getting wrong, and she's not listening because she doesn't like the fact that people had yelled at her before, and she's listening to these other guys who, you know, say, yeah, it doesn't suck to get yelled at. That's why these people are wrong, whatever. It's very unfortunate because, like I talked about with the, like, Tommy Lauren and Trevor Noah thing, although it's people who might be yelling at you are wrong, you gotta understand where that comes from. That's not just to be yelling at somebody. That's in a larger context of discrimination and, you know, self-esteem and identity. So it's one of those things where her as a, I believe she's bi, but her as, you know, sort of like a cis person, I think she should, I would hope for her to kind of, you know, understand how this comes off from someone from her station. Like us, you know, just as two cishet guys talking about this, like, we can't afford to really leave this episode with people thinking that, you know, well, sometimes trans people can be wrong. That means we're allowed to hate them. We can't do that. We have to be very precise in our language to make sure that, like, this is a situation that goes beyond winning an argument, essentially. And I think when people break it down in such simple ways, because that's the only way they can do it, that's when they kind of that's when they lose. That's when they kind of lose the argument, and that's when also when they kind of, you know, doom other people.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head with the hammer. Oh man, that's a Harrison Shute deep cut. I've never known how to say that phrase, that idiom, but it's hit the nail on the head, and that's what you did. The hammer has no place in that. But, you know, the idea of winning an argument, like, I feel like for, you know, liberals who just, that's like, that's their kind of modus is to argue. Like, obviously that's how you kind of make change. Yeah, I argue. But yeah, we definitely can't allow ourselves to kind of make that into the into the issue. And I guess there is a little bit of danger when you surround yourself with other liberals. Not to say that you should also surround yourself with conservatives. That's not what I'm saying. But the idea that you surrounded yourself by experts on social issues. Not that it can be dangerous, but it can kind of be about, like, you don't need to learn anything else. And not just about trans issues, but about, like, everything. There's always more to learn. Like, you can never, the library in your hometown can never be consumed by you in your lifetime. So just apply that principle to the universe of people and all their experiences and all their anxieties and fears and the danger that faces them. Like, you will never understand all of that. So don't walk into that room and say, "Hi, I'm Harrison, and you're a guy." Like, you have to actually say, "I use the pronouns he and him." It sounds completely silly, but that's the social context we're working with, and it's a pretty fucked one. It's pretty ancient by the standards of where we should be. But again, winning an argument, like, that should never be the end all. And I understand, like, that's the language that we're using, and that we have been using for so long, that it's hard to break out of that and start to kind of, like, rally the forces or whatever, to kind of, like, take inventory and be like, okay, now it's time to learn. I guess it's almost like compartmentalizing. Like, one part of our brain has to be for arguing, and another part of our brain has to switch on when it's time to learn.
Yes.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's kind of the thing now. Like, people kind of want to be, I guess, in that way, it's people who don't just take it seriously. Like, people who are ostensibly liberal or just moderate centrist or whatever, but, like, just say, "I don't hate trans people, but man, it really, fries my spaghetti when they blah 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 Tumblr or whatever." Like, you get a fucking life. I there are people on my Facebook wall that just, they chuckle so loudly on Facebook, they, like, sharing this shit, and just, like, so eye roll inducing. I think we're at final thoughts here. Is there anything else we want to kind of, like, say for this specific topic before we leap to the next one?
Let's see. Well, yeah, you mentioned the mainstream. That kind of reminded me of, I don't remember which tragedy it was in response to, but somebody had said, like, I think it's time. Oh, it was actually the military ban. I think it's time that, like, the mainstream media start to kind of not depict transgender people as aliens. I think that's very, very important. And it sucks that, like,
right,
you know, that's, like, that Hollywood should probably step in. I don't remember, like, what some of the main, like, transgender things out there are. I mean, you got Transparent, in which you got Jeffrey Tambor turning in a wonderful performance, but otherwise, you know, that show is, like, a little, I mean, fucked out of the gate. It came out
Before
we kind of, I mean, just because it's, you know, it's the Dallas Buyers Club thing again, or any, pretty much any movie or TV show that's been about transgender women is had a guy in the role. But, you know, when you've, like, I sample a lot of TV, a lot of network TV, and I've seen attempts at talking about transgender, and two instances that I thought were actually pretty okay were Doubt, which was an otherwise unremarkable Katherine Heigl legal drama, with Stephen Pascal in a main role, which I thought was funny because I never saw him. He was, like, in Alien versus Predator 2, and then he showed up as Mark Furman in People versus O.J. Simpson.
Oh, man.
He was just, like, leaping from legal drama to legal drama in that case. But no, that was a show that had Laverne Cox as one of the main characters, and that show got canceled after the first season, and not because of her, but it sucks. You know, like, she's got to, like, now go back out into the pool and find more work in TV. And then the other one was Star, which was the Lee Daniels thing that was kind of like Empire.
Oh, and, man, that came and went already.
I'm pretty sure it got canceled. I mean, I imagine it had to have been.
Yeah. Crap.
That was the kind of like the Fifth Harmony version. Like, even, like, it was so lame. Like, Queen Latifah is a character in that, and she's talking to Tyrese about how she used to be in a girl group called Mixed Harmony. It's just like so goddamn lame. But you know, parts of that show were pretty laudable, and there was a romance subplot with a black trans woman who was dating an Asian guy, and she was like, "Oh yeah, I'm trans," and he was like, "That's cool, baby," but. And he was, like, cheating on her or something. I don't know. It was weird. But, like, that, you know, that was another positive portrayal in terms of, because we were taking the woman's perspective. And that show, I assume, is not coming back also. And so I can't think of any other instances where you have a trans woman or trans man. We haven't really, I mean, yeah, that's another reason that we haven't really talked about trans men in this one, but maybe in a future episode. But
well,
we don't have a
I don't think we've specified specifically on trans women. I think we're just kind of just trans people, haven't we? Or maybe not.
I don't think so. But again, like, you know, I just think that, like, we need more movies and TV shows where trans people are playing trans people. And we have a healthy mix of marginalized narrative and non-marginalized narrative. And we don't have any of that. We don't have the first step in that. We have transparent. And I guess that's pretty good. It seems to be mostly about, like, exploring Jewish identity, which is cool, but that's a different subject matter. So, you know, anti-Semitism being what it is, obviously very important. But again, this is about trans issues.
Yeah, I'm going to mention Steven Universe, although I think when I previously labeled Stefani as trans, I think she's more gender non-binary. Because they specifically like refer to Stefani as like with the they pronoun, and did the same thing with Smokey Quartz, and like that's not, you know, of course they're sort of like, you know, writing Get Out because it's a person made up of two people, but it's legitimately like a new person that is binary, which is good. I know that for a while there was a binary writer and storyboard artist on the show. That was pretty public in like the fan circles and stuff. And so to me, that was sort of like the smallest peering window gateway into that, because I was unaware of that tenet of LGBTQ community. So I guess that's one of those things where like it's inclusion, even though it's not necessarily real. Of course, you know, letting in like, trans actors and non-binary actors, would definitely help. I thought that there was some in my head, and I don't know, but there was some young actress that declared themselves as non-binary. I thought it was like one of those Disney actors that I would not have known otherwise. But am I thinking of the girl from Girl Meets World or not? I might.
I don't know. It's not Miley Cyrus. I don't know.
Yeah, isn't Miley Cyrus pushing 30 or something? I'm not sure. But the point stands that like these are, you know, in the baby steps, we do have to like at least try to when people speak up, we should listen, obviously. So next time they do a big, like, you know, story about a trans person, maybe not hire. Matthew Bomber or whatever in that way. And I feel that like, speaking for myself, to see trans women as attractive, obviously this is one of those things where it's like, I have to, but it's just like, consider them just as women and think nothing more beyond that. No sort of trickery, nor sort of, you know, like working your way around. That's just the way that people are now, and people have been for a long time. So it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, hopefully a year from now or less, it'll be a much, much, much different, a different toned conversation.
Yeah. And that whole like, trans women are beautiful thing, like that's I think that is actually a separate podcast on its own that would be even darker and more complicated than this one. Hopefully we can cover that soon, because I could talk about that one for 5 hours straight. Ooh. But yes, I think those are some very fine closing thoughts. And I don't know if you had anything else to close the episode on.
No, just the basics. So what are we doing next time?
Oh, wait, before we get there, I should say, again, because I think one of the conclusions you reached is that it's important to surround yourself with people who not only raise these issues, but just can just exist as real in your mind and who you mm-hmm. care about. And I think that can even be reached through Twitter, because, like, I mean,
right.
Even if it's, like, somebody who does a lot, like Rebecca Sugar, like, she is still kind of an abstract person, or Rachel Bloom. But I really care about those people, even though I don't know them personally. So I think that can also be the case for somebody who does criticism or something like that. And so some of the transgender, all women and all white, I guess, in this case, but some of the transgender critics and writers that I follow who I can, I guess, vouch for or whatever, who I think are really great, are Caitlin Burns, Catherine Cross, Samantha Allen, and Roz Caveney. And I guess we'll just post links on the page. Catherine Cross, I feel really bad for, because she actually came under fire recently because she was just going off. Sometimes she likes to go on these big rants, and she called, like, leftist women handmaidens, and people were pretty upset about that. And she's been off Twitter for, like, 3 days, and I keep checking in. But she's, like, friends with Caitlin Burns, and she kind of, like, brought her to my attention. She's really cool, too. Samantha Allen. She writes for, like, the Daily Beast and has some tenuous connection to some other writers who I really like. Then Russ Caveney, of course. She's, like, a genre writer. She's just, like, poet stuff. Very cool. It's always weird because I feel like I've tried to say this advice before, but, like, find people, which is, like, kind of creepy and stalkerish, I realize. So, like, don't, like, bother them ever. Like, I don't think I've ever tweeted at any of these people, except for Ross Caveney in the very beginning. They just, you know, just follow them and, like, see, try to see through their eyes, I guess. And you know, as always, especially if it's cishet white men like myself, do not, like, just reduce your at replies by 100%, and then you'll be much better on Twitter.
Yes, and also, just to final adding on to that, Zania Jones. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Zania Jones? Zania
Jones? Yeah.
Z-I-N-N-I-A Jones. Because I'm on her website right now, and she has written for CNN, Al Jazeera, Democracy Now!, Fortune, New York Magazine, The Daily Beast, Autostraddle, Trans Advocate, Huffington Post, Women and Secularism, Jacobin, and BuzzFeed. So she's very – I've not heard of her until this whole thing blew up, but she's very prolific, and I'll be following her from here on in. But yeah, that was a great move to kind of, you know, don't – to quote LeVar Burton, don't take our word for it.
Reading rain or questions we don't have answers.
I can go anywhere.
So we have an email, and it is from our friend Michael Ridge. And Michael writes, "Hi guys. When I first saw HBO was advertising Confederacy, I wasn't too interested. I thought they were going to do a program I saw about 10 years ago called CSA, The Confederate States of America. Maybe a director's cut or extended cut, including deleted scenes that were shot or storyboarded. CSA was a faux documentary looking back at what happened after the Confederacy won the war, occupied the northern states, added territory through the Spanish-American War, stayed neutral but favored Hitler in World War II, and through to the present as a white Christian nation that never abolished slavery. It was presented at Sundance by the independent director/writer and got distribution through IFC. He has the credentials to do such a film based on his filmography. He also has more recently created a real documentary about the Indian school's efforts to extinguish native languages and traditions. He shares writing credits with Spike Lee on Chirac. When I heard you describe the actual project, I was surprised that anyone thought the premise could support a dramatic series. The fiction of owning people is such a big conflict that it swallows anything else that could be used to create episodic tension. This might work as a movie, but it seems like it's going over old ground. Of course, sequels, remakes, and reboots keep being made, and some do surpass the previous take on the subject. The Wizard of Oz with Judy Garland and The Maltese Falcon with Humphrey Bogart were both remakes. I don't think I knew that The Wizard of Oz was a remake. I read the Tyrock issues when they came out, and they were clangers even then. Mike Grell created Tyrock's look. According to Tomorrow's Legion Companion, Grell deliberately made him look ridiculous, saying, "I gave him a silly costume. It was somewhere between Elvis's Las Vegas costume and something you would imagine a pimp on the street corner wearing." Several writers complained that angry black man was a stereotype and the characterization wouldn't be popular. Silly and stereotype were terms that would appear in reviews. Thanks for your work on doing the podcast. Thanks for the work you are doing with the podcast. Thank you, Michael. I think I've also underestimated how old he was, because I believe that Legion issue was in the 70s, but... the less about that, the better. yeah, you referenced Confederate States of America, and that would, yeah. I guess a faux documentary. That's an interesting idea for a fictional series, I think. But I guess how would you differentiate that from Confederate? Would it just, because in thema just now, like right now, off the top, it's sort of positing, like, I guess it would be a celebration of a fake history rather than presenting a fake history. And would the potential disastrous normalization be the same, or would the analogous metaphorical storytelling be different, do you think?
I mean, I think they're both kind of, again, I think there's something rotten at the core of both of them, just because not necessarily alternate history, but that alternate history. I think that tone plays a part, because I remember, and this was like, 6 years ago that I saw CSA, but it was kind of, it was more like lighthearted because it was very much satire. And you know my feelings on satire. We don't need to go into that, but I don't think Confederate is really going for that. I think they're kind of going for the, you know, I don't think it's crazy to say that they would use Game of Thrones as kind of a precedent or a template, in which case you have very awful characters who push kids out windows when they catch them having sex with their sister, and then we come to sympathize with that character. Like, that's fine. but in the case where it's like the slave owner who pushes a kid out the window and has sex with his sister, and then we come to sympathize with that character, but he's a slave owner, like, that's not fine. Where in CSA, it was just kind of like, look at, and I think my problem with that show or with that movie when I saw it was that it was just so one note, and it was just kind of the same joke over and over again. But that's, you know, it's that's kind of inoffensive and maybe educational. But in Confederate's case, like, that's a very specific thing. Like, it's an HBO drama, which theoretically parades in the nuance and the complication. So you can't apply that to. You know, America where slavery never ended. That's not the place for it.
Yeah, I think we said it a dozen times in that episode. But when you're doing these dramas, I think what one thing that we actually like gave terminology to, but like the idea was that ambiguous and questionable and monstrous immorality not merely being investigated on and kind of being used as a storytelling device for exploring character. And character kind of trumps the morality you're kind of, you know, proposing. Like, you know, like again, I always think of Breaking Bad, although I've never seen it, but I have this idea of, you know, this horrible drug dealer, but you're caught up in this character that you're not really wondering about how awful he is in creating drugs and stuff.
Yes, that's precisely it.
Yeah, that kind of thing where it's, you know, a storytelling method by way of exploring these characters rather than just normalizing, you know, because again, this the idea that the Confederacy one is not unique to these guys. It is very much a white power fantasy, the South shall rise again kind of thing. So
yeah, and I think if it was a book, like if it was Man in the High Castle, it would be different. You can be a little bit more distant to the characters, but TV as a medium, maybe we don't understand it as well as we think, and we would just have to have sympathy for every single character. You know, it's just like the Death Wish example, where it's like when that became a movie, you had Charles Bronson acting out that role. It wasn't just, you know, words on a page, and not to say that, you know, novels don't elicit reaction, but authors working in prose have a better opportunity to be a little bit distant, you know, Brechtian distance, perhaps. You can do that better in print, because movies and TV have this hindrance of actors that can elicit emotion, even when they're not trying to. I'm curious, actually, did you see Chi-Raq?
I don't think it came to Nashville, to be honest. It got a limited release, I feel. I might be wrong, but like, yeah, I would have liked to, but it never really came around for me to see it. Did you?
I did not. Yeah, it's just one of those. Another one of those rando Spike Lee movies that comes out, and then it's back in the Disney vault. It just goes away. we actually read the play that's based on, Lysistrata, or whatever it is, by, I want to say Sophocles. I don't think that's the guy. I think that's coming back. I think they're doing a movie version of Lysistrata Jones, which is like the Broadway version. That's a pretty interesting story. I don't know how to feel about it. It's been a while, but if you don't know, that's or for the listeners, that's the play about the women who refuse sex.
right. And Chi-Raq is to do that to protest violence in Chicago.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that trailer because that was like one of the first like reappearances of Dave Chappelle. I was like, it's Dave Chappelle. He's alive. And I think Nick Cannon actually went on Trevor Noah to talk about the movie. But yeah, I never got around to it. I, you know what? Stella saw it. Because that was around the time that we were doing our Minority Report, so she was engaging in all things black.
Yeah, that's two for two. She saw Moonlight before you and Chi-Raq. What else?
I know. So I guess I...
The Brother from Another Planet. With, what's his name?
One of Wayans, right?
No, it's the guy from T2,
Joe
Miles
Morton?
Dyson, Joe Morton, yeah, from Eureka.
Oh hell no! She was asking me. I remember a few years ago. She was going to start the Boondocks. I was like, "You're not going to like the Boondocks. Don't watch it. You're not going to like that show."
Yeah. Pretty animation though.
Especially like season two onward, yeah. But yeah, thank you very much, Michael.
Yes, indeed.
And I'll call you back there to make it easier.
Okay. So for next time, we're kind of talking about like call out culture and kind of exploring more of the I guess toxic or liberal intersectionalism, I guess, that we kind of touched on a little bit
right.
in this episode. So the next episode will be about liberal versus liberal, but we still haven't quite formulated the question. So that'll be for next week. And with that, I've been Harrison Schutz, and my hetero life partner. No, that's dumb.
Troy and Abed in the morning. this is Donovan.
And we're out of here.
Aye!
Trip drop, the angels made a pit stop, pissing on the demons of the earth. What's it really worth?
Shit.
Now it's fucking pouring. Wanted to go skate. Now my day's boring. Snoring in the bed with blankets cause my head's spin. Probably cause I popped a couple purple Excedrins. It's a rainy day, so I'll skip the Led Zeppelin and play some Sade. Look at Lux, my headset. On my way home, I punched a bitch for an umbrella. Cause I really didn't wanna get my shit wet. Run through the puddles, playing in the mud. Fun. Sucks that I'm too tall for the tub. Or I would get my toys and make a lot of noise while my mama's in the kitchen cooking up a meal. Fireplace is starting up. Dick is barely warming up. Sippy cup full of whipped cream, hot chocolate.
I can smell it when I go outside.
Outside.
Then it just pours. Us peace, then all in the town is quiet.
Outside.
That's what rain's for. All the kids see rain and scream, no, no. Run off the bus and they will just stay in. Me, I love how rain fills the potholes. Me, myself, well, that's what we played in. Never wonder exactly where the sun goes. Did it go or did something shade it? Sun gives light cause it is the one though. Rain gives life cause it is amazing. Oh.
Striking water hitting on my window like Ike. I am not Tina, buddy. Do not get my window pane. Light bulbs when I'm wearing that wig and flying kites. Here's an idea. Why don't I go hiking on a fucking mountain where the water fountain's icing? Stand there in a tank top prop that's from Baywatch and eat about four bowls of some frozen ice cream. Get sick and then I won't have to go to school today, tomorrow, the day after. Sit in bed, write a bunch of raps up. Then I won't be lying when I say that I'm a sick rapper. I might fail, so I won't bother. The sun is playing hide and seek like my fucking father. The only difference is it comes back full effect. In the summer heats up, the thermometer's erected.
Outside of life.